I want you to get together.
So yeah, I made a slideshow connecting parasites to demons. And I looked into this topic through a biblical lens and I found a bunch of very, very interesting things. So go ahead, click on the next slide.
Yeah.
Okay, so before getting into all the weird stuff, let's take a look at what parasites mean in its, most simplest definition. So a parasite is an organism that lives at the expense of another organism, the host. In general, parasites share the following features. Parasites are usually smaller than their host and are both invertebrate and vertebrate hosts. So yeah, basically they're an organism that lives inside of a host and they benefit from the host suffering, basically. So go back to the other slide.
Oh, how do I go back now? Ooh, that, oh, there we go.
So I looked into a lot of ancient beliefs on parasites and the spiritual world, and I found two very interesting ones. The first being Taoists. So go to the next slide.
Those monsters holding dynamite.
The what?
It looks like they got dynamite or something in their
Yeah,
mouths.
or a scroll or something.
Or that.
So, in ancient Taoism, there's a concept known as the three worms, right? And they fully believe that parasites are demonic, or at least connected to demonic spirits. So, the three corpses known as the Sanshi or three worms are a Taoist physiological belief that demonic creatures live inside the human body and they seek to hasten the death of their host. These three supernatural parasites allegedly enter the person at birth and reside in the three dantian, which are energy centers, respectively located within the head, chest, and abdomen. After their human host dies, they are freed from the body and become malevolent ghosts. So that's their belief on parasites. They believe that they're actually demonic entities influencing a human through all kinds of means. Through basically, they believe that parasites were like a biological agent or like a Bluetooth for demons or demonic spirits. So click the next slide. So yeah, the three worms, the three corpses, they work to harm their host's health and faith by initiating sicknesses and inviting other disease-causing agents into the body, and they would report their host transgressions to the gods. So their entire purpose is to bring as much suffering as possible, and then eventually death. And then they become these spirits as soon as the body dies with the parasite, apparently. And then they report the transgressions of the host to the gods. So that was their belief on parasites. And then as we move on, we get into the biblical view of parasites. And we're going to talk about Beelzebub, Lord of the Fly. That's one of his titles. And in the Bible, he is known as the demon of filth. So the word Beelzebub means Lord of the Flies in Hebrew and Jewish literature. The name is translated to mean Lord of Dung or Lord of Filth. Beelzebub was also known as the god of Ekron. Ekron is a city inhabited by the Philistines within the Bible. And on the topic of flies, go to the next slide. So it's interesting that he's called, Lord of the Flies, Lord of Filth, Lord of Pestilence, Disease, and Suffering. Flies apparently can carry parasites that can harm humans and animals. Houseflies can carry over 100 pathogens, including parasites like pinworms, roundworms, hookworms, and tapeworms. They can also carry bacteria, viruses, and fungi. Flies can pick up pathogens from their environment, including dumps, sewers, garbage heaps, and then transmit them to humans. And in other mythological beliefs of gods that are, connected to filth and disease and pestilence, they kind of have the same view that their god of disease and filth can send pestilence in the form of flies and, different kind of diseases like a plague, basically, to whatever nation that it wants to punish. Are you able to see the parasites in fiction slide? But yeah, you could just stay here. Basically, on the slide, I show two movies, the movie Faculty and the movie Venom, where it portrays parasites in like a fictional way, where there's like an alien parasite that takes over a human body and basically fully controls the host, right? So that's what the movie Faculty is about. It's about these parasites that come from another world and they take over the teachers in this high school, right? And they cause them to be violent and evil. And again, many of us have seen the movie Venom, right, where the Spider-Man villain takes over somebody and causes him to do, dark and demonic things like kill people, eat people, and other
Also
wicked
from
things.
another, also from
Another world, right?
outer space too.
Yeah, So the motif is the same, that these alien parasites come from another world, basically.
If I
So
remember
go ahead.
correctly, in Venom, didn't the was it Eddie Brock? Is that the main guy? Yeah, I
Yes.
believe he was on his knees praying to God for an answer to kill Spider-Man
Peter
in a
Parker.
church. And at the same time, Spider-Man was at the top of the church tower ringing the bell, making the symbiote come off of him. And then it drips down and lands on Eddie Brock and makes him the new host. So I thought it's
Yeah.
interesting that there's a biblical reference there as
Well, you
well.
Oh yeah, well I think that's a comic book, and that's probably the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 3. That's the way the story goes. It was funny in the current Venom movie, I believe that the scene before he gets the host, the Venom on him, the symbiote on him, he's doing meditation. He's like doing this meditation by like this new age guru. And I believe the shirt he's wearing is like this shirt that has the Eye of Horus on it.
Right, of course.
Probably not an accident they put that in the movie, that eventually he gets possessed by a demon right after that. But it's interesting, again, if you go to the idea of like the old world technology, the fact that the church bells heal Peter Parker of this demon, right? The thing that the demon Interesting.
comes
They killed off the
frees him
parasites
from him.
on the frequency, right? Another biblical reference is Venom would always reference himself in like a plural form, like we are Venom, we this, we are going to do this. Kind of like Legion in the Bible, basically.
Absolutely, definitely.
But yeah, so when looking into this topic through a biblical lens, I realized that demons have a lot in common with parasites. Like they're pretty much identical. So go to the next slide. So demons within the Bible have been known to cause and influence suicidal behavior, like the account found in the book of Mark, chapter 9, verse 22. So in this account, a father is asking Jesus for help because his son is possessed by a demon. And this demon is basically casting his son into fire to try to kill it that way, and then trying to drown his son, right? Basically taking control of his cognitive abilities and making him commit self-harm. And so, yeah, demons within the Bible and within the beliefs of many other cultures were known to influence and cause suicidal behavior. And the psychiatrist Jerry Marcinski that me and Paul interviewed also talked about this, how the voices or the entities of his schizophrenic patients would always encourage them to harm themselves, right? And harm others, basically engaging in self-destructive behavior.
Yeah, it was
So
funny
go to the
actually.
next slide.
Well, what's interesting, me and Paul just when we talked about the Tucker Carlson, his clips from this podcast on the last one, he was on the Sean Ryan podcast. Like, he literally mentions that the things are anti-human by logic, they're not from human. And we specifically mentioned like the kind of self-harm that only humans
Exactly.
really do to themselves. And you have all these kind of things that we're doing as a society that are antithetical to our own survival and our own best interests. Therefore, it's likely to conclude that it's not from us.
Not from humans. Kind of like Jerry said in an interview with me, he stated that the human spirit doesn't want to destroy itself, right? Like you can take a suicidal person and throw him into a shallow lake. He's not going to try to drown himself. He's going to try to save himself, right? These thoughts of self-harm are not human because our spirit does not want to die, right? We are, God created us with this instinct to preserve our bodies and our souls, right? So
It's
we.
interesting because I had a subscriber reach out to me recently, and I just had a 2 hour talk with her a couple of nights ago. Now she decided against releasing the talk because she doesn't feel like she told the story very well. But she basically told me the harrowing story of her son's suicide and the events leading up to it. And he was basically a man possessed, is the only way I can describe the description she gave me. He was heavily seeped into the occult. He had schizophrenic tendencies, what Jerry Marcinski, would describe as the classic schizophrenic type DSM-5 type of symptoms, but it's clear it was demonic, the influence, because he was literally making altars to gods and was covering himself in odd Egyptian iconography. He was acting like something that wasn't himself. This woman was telling me he would start acting incredibly flamboyant and strange, and moving his limbs in weird ways. With the way he talked, his voice would change. And in those moments of those episodes he was having, it's like, that's not my son. Like, I don't know who that was, but he would suddenly switch back to this sweet, kind, caring person again. But then he would become somebody else in an odd, strange way. And he would get clean from drugs, which seemed to be triggering for him. And then he would get back on track, and then he would relapse and fall back into this odd character again, who wasn't himself. And it got to the point where he kept wanting to leave and go. I think he wanted to go to LA or something. He kept wanting to leave and travel a really far distance. And he always kept getting stopped when he had these episodes. She obviously forced the police on him to arrest him just to save his life, basically. But he got to the point where he did end up in this place, and when he got there, he steps in front of a train. It seems like the thing inside of him was leading him to a point with the promises he believed he was going there to save people or something. Like there was something pushing him there. I have to go to this place. I have to go here. I have to go here. And when he got there, he ended up, obviously, like I said, killing himself. And the whole story was honestly, I hope she retells it so and shares it so I can share it with you all. But I can only give you glimpses here, but that wasn't human, whatever happened to him. And I could see the occult through everything. She showed me his artwork and the things, the way he drew himself in during these episodes, because he was an artist, and you could clearly see something else was channeling through him. And he created a lot of artwork with symbols of alchemy and hermeticism, and mainly theosophy as well. A lot of theosophical symbols, like the front cover of the book by Helena Blavatsky about the Theosophical Society. It's quite literally all those symbols all mashed together. He was drawing quite a lot of. And it just seems so odd from his mother's perspective. Like that wasn't her son. That just wasn't who he was growing up. Something happened, you know. And maybe I don't know if she's listening, but maybe this parasite thing could be another answer as well. Maybe he got infected with a particular parasite that was using him in some way. Because me and Joe were just talking. There are literally parasites in nature that make the host kill themselves.
But yeah, just like demons, parasites can influence or cause suicidal behavior, right? So there are a lot of scientific studies that show this to be the case. People who have the T. Gandhi parasite, which is the most successful mind control parasite on Earth, around 1 to 2 thirds of humans are infected worldwide. So this isn't a third world country problem. This is a worldwide problem. You could live in the cleanest neighborhood in Beverly Hills and you might be infected with a bunch of these parasites. But yeah, it causes triggers suicide attempts and suicidal behavior. Right, this little biological worm can take control of your cognitive abilities and do this. You go to the next slide. So, demons in the Bible and within the beliefs of many other cultures can cause various mental health disorders. Go to the next one. Parasites, just like the demons, who are able to cause various mental health disorders, are connected to psychosis and other human diseases, both physical and mental. So, there are studies showing that. They can cause bipolar disorder. They can cause multiple personality disorder. They are connected to schizophrenia. They have also been connected to rage disorders within adults. And what's very interesting, they're also connected to child maltreatment, meaning those who mistreat their children or other children, whether it's physical or sexual harm, they are more likely to have parasites, which is crazy. If you have this parasite, you are more likely to get into accidents, car accidents. You're also more likely to be an adrenaline junkie, right? So basically, you're more likely to engage in self-destructive behavior if you have these parasites, which is interesting. But go to the next one. So yeah, they're associated with a lot of major mental health disorders. One-fifth of schizophrenic patients apparently may involve the parasite T. Gandhi. But yeah, very, very bizarre stuff. Go to the next one. So parasites can control our cognitive functions and desires. There have been other studies that show that the T. Gandhi parasite can make us attracted to fear, danger, pain, and submissiveness, kind of like BDSM. So if you're into those kind of sexual activities, there's a good chance you might have this parasite. And this parasite has also been associated with sexual promiscuity, right? So those who are more sexually promiscuous, there's a higher chance of them having this parasite. Because it's one of the ways that this parasite spreads, right? So it influences your behavior to have more sex with random people so that it could spread itself more. But yeah. Next one. There are studies that show that this parasite can make you more attractive or influence behavior to make you more attractive, right? So like let's take somebody like a woman going to a club dressing provocatively. There's a chance that dressing like that could be influenced from the parasite in order to make her look more sexually attractive. Same goes for the men, right? So The article says right here, imagine a parasite has infected you and that parasite needs you to have sex to move to a new host. It would certainly be in that parasite's interest to help you become more physically attractive to a mate and act more promiscuously. So if you guys need more motivation to not just have random sex with people and follow the Bible, right? Not give in to your lust. If you want a more disgusting motivation, well, here it is. There's a good chance that the people you're having sex with, all these one-night stands, they could be infected with parasites, right? So the more promiscuous you are, the higher chance of you being infected with many parasites. So very weird stuff. So yeah, this parasite can make you more attractive, so you have more sex and spread it. It's also been connected with other sexual attractions and behaviors, specifically connected to fecal matter and those kind of sexual activities that involve the back door. Because through feces is one of the ways that this parasite can spread, right? This parasite also influences fatal attraction, right? To fear and danger. And people who are into sexual violence are also more likely to have this parasite. But yeah. Parasites manipulate or can manipulate your eating behaviors. Some parasites, like tapeworms, can increase your appetite and food consumption, which can lead to weight gain. Microbes in your gut, including parasites, can manipulate your eating behavior to increase their fitness. They might do this by making you crave foods or crave more foods they specialize in or that suppress their competitors by making you feel dysphoric, right? Dysphoric until you eat foods that benefit them. So what kind of foods benefit them? Processed foods, sugars, processed carbohydrates, that is their fuel source, right? So again, this connects to the sin of gluttony. This parasite influences you to eat all this sugar, all this processed foods. And I find it very interesting, right? Like on every, it's the most common advertisement you see, right? You can't go 30 minutes without seeing a fast food advertisement, on a billboard or like a YouTube video or anywhere else, right? We see it all day. I don't know how many fast food advertisements you guys encountered since you woke up, right? But this is their fuel source. It's processed foods. It's trying to make the gut as unhealthy as possible so it can be more suitable for these demonic parasites. So it's interesting that it literally takes control of your cravings, right? So craving a bunch of sugar and processed food is not normal whatsoever. I go to the next one. But yeah, that's their fuel source. So yeah, we're going to talk about T. gandhi. This is known as the most successful parasite on Earth. Like I stated earlier, 1 to 2 thirds of humans are infected with this parasite, right? So it doesn't matter if you're a Christian, if you're an atheist, if you live in a third world country, or a clean neighborhood somewhere in Beverly Hills, you still can be infected by this parasite. Now, what's very interesting about this parasite that although it can infect like any warm-blooded animal and humans, its definitive host is a cat and members of the cat family. So that means that its sexual reproduction can only happen within a cat's body, which I find
It's
very
weird.
interesting. No other animal is this parasite able to reproduce inside. So it's also one of the reasons doctors tell mothers, right, who are pregnant to not go near cat feces. Have you guys heard of that before?
I think I actually have heard that. Yeah, I was saying that that's weird
Yeah,
that
so the
it's
reason
able to.
is because when the cat poops, all those little, what are they called, oocytes, the little eggs, right, from the T. gandhi parasite ends up in the cat poop. And it's very dangerous to babies. It can kill babies, as you know, and pregnant mothers. And so a lot of doctors, they will ask you, do you own a cat? If yes, well, they tell you to stay away from the cat litter. Don't clean it. Have somebody else clean it, right? So that's a common thing. So a lot of you watching who are mothers or who are pregnant, you probably know this because doctors most likely have told you to stay away from cat litter. But yeah, go to the next one. So after learning about the whole weird cat connection to this parasite, I started thinking about the ancient beliefs of cat worship, right? Or like, why were cats considered so holy in different ancient cultures, specifically ancient Egypt? And I thought that the ancient Egyptians worshipped cats as gods, but that's not the case. Cats were actually worshipped. They weren't worshipped as gods themselves, but as vessels that the gods chose to inhabit and whose likeness the gods chose to adopt. So they're not gods themselves. They were believed that they can be vessels for the gods. And that's why they were considered so holy, right? And they would mummify them next to the pharaohs. And again, it's interesting that they can be vessels for gods. And then scientifically, they can be vessels for demonic like parasites that can take control of your body, influence your behavior, influence you to do self-destructive things like harm yourself, harm others, right? Just basically do a bunch of sinful things, what the Bible would call sinful, right? So I found that
Sure.
connection very interesting. And again, this is not a vendetta against cats. You know, I love cats. I had one that passed away like a year ago from liver issues, but I'm just pointing out like a weird connection. It's very interesting. Go to the next one.
What's weird
Oh, go
about
ahead.
cats too is that you have, like, if you watch the way they move like big cats. They move like tigers and lions and stuff. But I saw a video about a year ago, and it was basically pointing out the fact that, but the eyes of a cat, a household cat, a
Perfect.
domesticated cat, are different than the big cats. The big cats don't have the split pupils. So like the domesticated cat literally has like a reptilian looking eye. That's
And hip like
weird.
snake.
That's weird. I mean, that's really bizarre. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, because you would expect all the characteristics to be the same on these animals. It's just a miniature version of it, but obviously there's something different about that. And I thought, I remember in the Mummy movie, there was a point where like the mummy was trying to like, regain physical form. And at one point, like the cat scares the mummy. The mummy was like terrified of the cat. It was just like, yeah, obviously it's not really explained other than just like we know there's this connection with the Egyptians and cats.
It's funny
The
because
belief
I.
that.
Are vessels for gods, right? And have
I did just
you guys
watch
seen the movie The Fallen?
the which one?
Fallen?
The
I don't
fun
see Denzel.
no, I don't know.
Okay, so that movie is about the fallen angel Azazel taking over a human host and basically causing them to kill, right? Becoming a serial killer. And at the end of the movie, when that host dies, right, and Azazel is freed, he inhabits a cat. That's the ending of the movie. Which is interesting. I just want.
Well, there's even in what's in the Men in Black, I think the first Men in Black movie, they're trying to get Orion's belt, and I think the cat's name Orion. I think it's wearing some like little collar or something like that has a whole universe attached to its collar.
Well, isn't it also common in stereotypical mainstream Hollywood witchcraft that the familiar a witch always has is a pet cat of some kind? That's they always have a familiar, don't they? Like witches and warlocks.
Yeah, I looked that up, and apparently cats, according to the belief of ancient witches, their little cat partners, specifically black cats, were like a shape-shifting demon or something. That's what they believed. Familiar story.
So that Fallen movie you're talking about, just think about the Smurfs. So Gargamel has a cat, and the cat is named Azrael. It's pretty close. It was even in the movie Cinderella. The cat's name in the Disney movie is called Lucifer.
Oh yeah.
That's right.
Making some
On a weird
connections here.
But so ancient Egypt and demonic parasites. So now that we know that cats were not considered gods, but vessels for the gods, I found it also interesting that a lot of Egyptian pharaohs and royalty had that serpent symbol on their headdress, right? Coming out of their head. And there could be a chance that that little serpent is could be a parasite, right? That's controlling the pharaoh himself, right? Like a
Oh
demonic god
wow. I never
that's
thought about it like
controlling the
that.
human blood.
Oh, that, I think that's a fascinating concept because people have always equated that to being a symbol for the third eye or something like that. Or like the what's it called? The serpent energy that goes up the spine. What is the name? The Kundalini energy
I
that
like
goes
that kind of metaphor, right?
Yeah, like a culminating into the pineal gland and accessing the spiritual realms. And I think people always equated that to be that. Or if not that, people would say it's a mark or a symbol of the bloodline, the reptilian bloodline of some kind, the Nephilim, let's say. But that concept that it's actually just a parasite controlling the mind, I think that's really fascinating. And have you ever seen Naked? Is it the Naked Lunch? It's a I'm gonna have to Google this. I'm sorry guys, and I know it's gonna come up on the screen if everyone else
It
is seeing
could
it.
also be, like serpent as like it's the serpent's obviously associated with knowledge. So it could be all the above. It could be
Yeah,
third eye, it could be knowledge, it could be and it could also, but of course they'd want to think it is something more grand than having worms in your brain.
So it was William S. Burroughs who wrote the book called The Naked Lunch, and it was about basically a heroin addict's descent into madness. And he ends up communicating with regularly and seeing these reptilian people, these entities. And they had a proboscis, which comes out of the forehead, or I think, or something like that. And it was basically a parasite that came out of the forehead. And I think the Vril stuff that comes out quite a lot in conspiracy circles. I think even Donald Marshall,
Yeah.
the cloning center guy, kind of came up with a lot about this. But he says the parasite comes out of the forehead of the reptilian monster, and that monster just dies. But it's because all of its consciousness is in that parasite that just came out of his forehead, and there's nothing else to it, you know? And I thought that was fascinating because that's symbolically speaking, that's what's going on right there. That image you're showing there's a parasite coming out of the forehead of a possibly reptilian hybrid bloodline. And the consciousness is of the true entity controlling that vessel is seated in the parasite. And that's what we're trying to say here, isn't it? That parasites are demonic in consciousness, or perhaps conduits for demonic consciousness. And when you are parasitically infected, you are technically possessed by the consciousness of demons.
I
Something like
believe.
that. So it all kind of connects in some weird ways, all these other things that I was just noticing and firing in my mind right now. But sorry, go ahead, carry on.
Yeah, should I go next slide?
Oh no, get down this slide. So that's possibly the possibility is that the serpent represents a demonic parasite taking over the pharaoh, controlling the pharaoh's body. And that's actually how parasites work when they take control of your cognitive ability, specifically the Tiangong parasite. It coils up in the brain, like near the pituitary gland, and that's how it's able to influence your behavior, your actions. And it's possibly what's going on in this picture, right? So at the bottom, it says, were cats honored in ancient Egypt? Yes, cats were considered holy and vessels for the gods. How is toxoplasmosis spread to humans? One of the big ways is through cats, right? That's how you get this demonic parasite, basically. But yeah, next slide. So after looking into all that and finding all these interesting connections, I also realized that a lot of biblical commandments are actually anti-parasitical, right? Like in the Bible, the commandment not to sleep around, right? Not to lust. It protects you from being infested with paras or infected with parasites, right? One of the biggest ways to kill off parasites is through fasting. So in the book of Matthew, chapter 17, verse 21, there's an account of the disciples trying to cast out a demon, and nothing seems to be working, right? Which is odd because they were able to cast out demons before, but this case is a little different. And so Jesus comes to them and he says, this is different. This kind of demon is a lot stronger, and this kind goes out only by prayer and fasting, right? So again, if parasites are like demonic biological agents that, are controlled by demons, and that's how they're able to cause all these physical and mental ailments, then it makes sense as to why Jesus said this kind will go out by fasting, right? Because fasting kills parasites. So all textbooks and treatises dealing with the subject of rooting parasite stress or parasites, they stress the importance of fasting, right? Because it kills parasites. And that's why often, I don't know if you guys fasted for a few days before or even a day, right? You've never fasted before, you'll notice that you start experiencing mental clarity and certain ailments, maybe even your vision is getting better, right? And that's another thing. Like I said in the beginning, parasites are able to cause all kind of physical ailments, just like demons, right? So in the Bible, demons were able to cause deafness. Parasites can cause deafness, according to a lot of studies. Parasites can also cause blindness, just like demons in the Bible, right? They can cause cancers and all kinds of issues, basically. Virtually every issue can be connected to parasites, which is crazy, right? And yeah, so fasting is one of the best ways to kill off parasites. And this is why Jesus said that there are certain demons that you can't just get rid of by casting them out in my name or just by praying. He says you need to pray and fast.
Well,
Can I
that's
go to the next?
interesting because even the way that, I mean, I would have read it, or I have always read it, like the person trying to cast the demon out needs to fast, but perhaps he meant the person with the demon needs to fast.
The
You
person
know what
with
I
the
mean?
demon.
Like, yeah, the part, yeah, because I mean, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, that you would have just assumed, like, oh, you're not doing it right. You guys need to fast and come back later and then pray. But yeah, it actually kind of makes more sense in the context where, like, you can't cast this kind out. They need to fast and they need to pray,
It's
and then
funny,
they can be healed.
exactly.
It's funny because in the past I would have always assumed that the necessity of fasting to cleanse demons from the body was more to do with taking away from the demon the thing it's using your vessel for. Do you get what I mean? So in a way, it leaves you behind because you're no longer partaking in that particular thing that it was using you to enjoy,
That
right?
you can't cut off.
Sorry. Yeah, so the idea was that, demons were using you for something. They wanted you to smoke something, drink something, eat something, do something particular. But when you stop doing that thing or fast from doing that thing, then it would kind of starve the demon of what it wants, so it gets bored or leaves or something like that. But this makes far more sense that if you don't get rid of the physical issue, the physical antennae or conduit for the demon, it can always keep its claws in you through the parasites. This massively explains fasting and the necessity in a biblical sense in ways that that blew my mind. I just thought I'd say that. Anyway, go ahead.
We talked about fasting being very important, right, to cast out demons and also to cast out parasites, right? So it's interesting that that's the same. So the concept of fasting is actually missing in a lot of modern Bibles, especially English Bibles. I think it's also missing in a lot of modern Bibles, throughout the world, whatever language it's in. So here's an example, right? Matthew 17:21 is missing in NIV and I believe also ESV and a bunch of other English translations. And so in Matthew 17:21, it says you can only cast out this kind of demon by prayer and fasting. Now, there are some Bibles that say cast it out by prayer, but it doesn't say fasting, right? So,
That's weird.
another example is Mark 9:29,
Oops.
where it says, He said unto them, This kind can come forth by nothing but by prayer and fasting, right? Now, the NIV says, He replied, This kind can come out only by prayer, right? And again, you find the word fasting missing in a lot of modern Bible versions, which is interesting because that's what a demon would probably want. If it knows that fasting can cast it out, it probably wouldn't want it in these modern Bible versions that a lot of Christians read. And a lot of these
Well,
modern Bibles, I'll go ahead.
I was going to say that's like that translation. This kind of can only come out by prayer. It's kind of like, isn't that kind of what they're doing anyway? Like, what do you mean it can only come by prayer? It's like it does
Yeah,
seem like
they've been doing that,
yeah, they've
like
been praying to get the demon now. Like, so like that seems kind of like that's not a lot of help
something's
without
missing,
the
right?
yes, like it does seem like something's omitted from that statement.
So
Well,
a lot of these
this is
yeah, go ahead.
huge. This is a huge condemnation for the NIV here, though, to omit
Oh,
something
yeah.
so important. This is damning of that translation. Like
I
when
mean,
you
the
think
Bible
about the
has
context.
warnings, right? The Bible has warnings. What happens to those who omit verses, right? To the scribes who omit these things, right?
Well, it's funny because people always argue in the millennial kingdom realm, like, well, how would the Bible have survived in such a realm of like complete control by Satan? Why do you think your book's so special that it wouldn't have been corrupted? And we're showing you here, they're making attempts. They're trying their best. Like they're doing things, It's not like, but we know there's a core message that, and so many copies, it's very difficult for them to fully erase it from history. It would have been da impossible, in fact, to erase the Bible from history. It's the most read, most copied, most vast book in the world, But what they can do is, well, we'll just create new versions. We'll just
Well,
keep,
well,
go
I think it's yeah, it's subtle. It's more subtlety that they kind of remove, or like, because obviously these are translations, and some of them I would believe are the best faithful translations they could do. But I saw a video from the scholar who was saying like the KJV, obviously versus like the Geneva, where it's like the king is like the head of the church. King James was like the head of the church at the time, and so it's like, we don't have a position for like with like when kind of like the biblical structure of a church, so therefore we would start putting our roles into this language when it's really not, it's kind of like that's why people are like, well, where's the pastor? So why do we see a pastor as overseer here? Because that's the position we have here. It doesn't necessarily mean it's correct in the way that it's but that's the position, because it's kind of like, so our language would say that a pastor and overseer are the same. But they're not. But that's the word that would be translated because that's the word we have for it. So I think that those kind of subtleties, I think that definitely are, because they don't want to change our whole structure of our church,
Absolutely.
So
Go ahead.
there are hundreds of Bible versions, right? Or English Bible versions. And in order to, when we're talking about, a lot of these Bible versions are copyrighted, right? So NIV is copyrighted, ESV is copyrighted, KJV is public domain. And other older Bibles are also public domain. I believe the Septuagint is also public domain, right? The Orthodox Bible. So again, I don't think it's right to have God's word copyrighted, right? It belongs to everybody. But what's interesting about the whole copyright thing, when writing a book, in order to have a copyright, you have to have at least a 10% difference from the book that you're copying from, right? So let's say you want to write a version of Lord of the Rings. Well, it has to at least have 10% or more. So what does that mean for these modern Bible versions? It means you would have to omit verses, right? And as the years go by, it keeps getting watered down more and more and more, just like you see right here.
Interesting.
Yeah, NIV is missing verses, right? Specifically fasting. And yeah, so a lot of these Bibles, and in fact, a lot of these modern Bibles that a lot of Christians read, a lot of my friends read, they're younger than them, right? So the ESV, for example, it was created in 2001. So I'm older than the ESV. The NIV was created in the 1970s. Right, so a lot of these Bible versions were recently created. There's
Well,
so many of them.
the NIV, I remember my buddy who liked the NIV, but he was saying there was an NIV that was before 1984 that was better. Like, and then I think after 1984, they started changing it and they started making gender pronouns more neutral and probably doing stuff like this. And that's why like most people who know better don't rely on the NIV anymore.
So again, like the Bible says, it's the scribes peddling God's word for money, right? Like taking out verses, making it copyrighted and selling it, right? You go on the NIV website, you'll see the little copyright thing. But
Well,
yeah,
that's
so
that the same way. So it's like the likely that let's just say, well, this is a better translation, but I have to change it enough so I can sell it.
yeah.
I mean, that's
Money
obviously
thing.
sound that sounds horrible.
It's wicked, yeah, it's a money thing. And
Just
it's
got.
interesting. Specifically, fasting is what's being removed from a lot of these versions.
I think this is a huge smoking gun for the kind of things they want to keep from us. Like I said, just they're clearly hiding the importance of parasites here. So just a shout out to the chat here. Someone called Alani said something which is very interesting. And I think I don't know if you've thought about this already, but I think maybe you're getting to it. But the comment is your antibodies are God's way of sending an army of angels to combat, let's say, the legion of demons in a way. Metaphorically speaking, and perhaps literally speaking, could this have something to do with it? Is this where maybe the idea that people who can kind of cure themselves through intent by just keeping a positive attitude in some way or
Belief, yeah, belief and faith.
having faith in God that will cure all things, does that produce antibodies in some way where that combats parasites? I don't know. I'm just literally spitballing here from that comment. That comment just rung out to me. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that is. It's kind of like, that's the purpose of prayer. Prayer destroys the demons in its spiritual form, right? It casts it out in the spiritual form, and fasting kills the physical part, which is the demon's like Bluetooth or biological agent, which is the parasite. And so I think so. I mean, by prayer, you're tuning into something good, right? You're tuning into God. And why not? I mean, throughout the Bible, he's changed people's physical ailments, right? Like Jesus was healing people with his power, right? So it's possible that it is creating antibodies, right? Like, how did Jesus heal the blind man? He spit on the ground, right? And dirt. Is that what
Rub, yeah,
happened?
rub dirt in his face, rub dirt in his eyes.
It was like his DNA or something like that. I don't know. That part was interesting. But yeah, a lot of Bible versions remove the concept of fasting, and fasting is incredibly important. And another thing to say is, because fasting is a concept that's removed from the Bible, a lot of these modern Bible versions that these churches read, and removed from the teachings of a lot of these churches as well, especially the Protestant churches within America, it makes sense as to why Christians, statistically speaking, in America are the fattest religion, meaning atheists are healthier and fitter. Hindus, Muslims, every other religion is healthier than us, right? So I grew up in a Slavic community. I grew up Orthodox, actually, but I have like relatives and cousins that grew up Baptist. And there's a lot of Baptists from where I'm from. I used to live in Sacramento. And a common tradition, right, for a lot of churches in America is after church on Sunday, let's go to a buffet, right? Let's just scarf a bunch of food, a bunch of processed carbs and processed sugar. And that was the tradition, right? So it's very normal, like being fat and gluttony was not seen as like a very serious sin. You know, what they would say was, oh, that's more of a fleshly thing. It's not as serious as committing other sins. But within the Bible, the spirit and the flesh are always interconnected. You're not going to separate the two. If your flesh is not doing well, your spirit's not doing well, right? If your spirit's not doing well, your flesh is not doing well. And an example of that is, let's say you have anxiety, right? Something happens. your appetite's gone, right? That affects you physically.
Yeah,
Let's
definitely.
say your gut is all messed up physically, right? From eating something bad, or again, getting infected with the parasite, what's going to happen? You're going to get anxiety, right? Because a lot of our emotions come from the stomach. And again, throughout the Bible, that's kind of a concept, is the fact that the soul is located in the stomach, right? Jesus said, out of the belly, living waters come out, right? There's always this like connection to the belly and the soul within the Bible, right? That all our, and it makes sense, even scientifically, all our emotions come from the stomach. And they even
Yeah.
found neurons that we find in the brain, we can also find in the stomach. So again, it's like connected, right? So our
Well,
belly is.
what's interesting too is like our memories. Like, 'cause I think they say like in our brain, they would say the hippocampus is where our short-term memory comes, but they really don't know where like the long-term memory is stored.
The belly, most likely the belly.
Yeah, it could be like the belly where like you were saying like I was hearing like the heart, but yeah, like the belly and the heart are kind of like just kind of like connected, like biblically,
Well,
they.
yeah.
Well,
Here's
it's
the
kind of
thing
like
about
interesting, like the way it's described too. It's like your heart, the heart's wicked, and the heart wants all of these things. And it talks about the belly of the wicked. You know, it's like it's always suffering want because it's insatiable. It's almost like a tapeworm. So it's like taking in all this stuff, and I can never fill myself up with the desires of this thing.
Or like in the Bible, it says the words of a talebearer, of a gossiper, goes down to the innermost parts of the belly, right? When somebody gossips to you or hurts your feelings, you feel it in your stomach, right? Your stomach is in knots. You feel horrible. And that's another thing that's interesting is the whole concept of the gut feeling. I believe there's a good chance that like good gut feelings is the Holy Spirit, right? If it's possible, our gut is the temple of the Holy Spirit. Which is actually a belief the ancient Hebrews had, that the soul and the Holy Spirit resided somewhere in the belly. Even the word heart in the Bible, like if you look up the KJV Old English translation of heart, one of the meanings is the middle, right? So like in the Bible, when it talks about the heart of an issue or the heart of the earth, that's the middle, right? Jesus went to the heart of
Right,
the earth.
correct.
Jonah was in the heart of the belly, or so the heart, one of the definitions. Especially when the Bible talks about the heart in a spiritual sense, it's not talking about your organ or your consciousness, like in your head. It's talking about the stomach, right? The middle. So it's the
Yeah, that
heart.
makes sense.
Don't trust your heart. Don't trust your gut feelings, especially if they're wrong, right? Especially if your stomach's all types of messed up. So,
Well, it's
yeah.
yeah, they're kind of, it's kind of like they're all related because you're saying like that. It's like, yeah, your heart is kind of like it's like this the feeling you get. And so
Yeah.
Bobby, yeah, you the way you where you feel the feeling is in your stomach.
So
You
think
know, and
about
it's it even talks about even like the Bible talks about wine and how like making your heart merry. So
it.
obviously, does the wine go into your to the organ that pumps blood or does it go into your to your belly? You know,
Your
it talks about
belly, right?
making yeah. So I mean, yeah, so it's like that these things are kind of connected on like who you are, you
Yeah.
know.
I think our identity, all our emotions come from the belly. A lot of people say that when they pray or when they pray and feel the Holy Spirit, they have this like pleasant, warm feeling in the stomach, right? A lot of people in different cultures also believe that, like in Taoism, they believe that the stomach is the most important energy center. In the book of Job, it says the force of a man is where? It's in the belly, right? And
We
that,
certainly feel fear in the belly.
oh yeah, we feel all emotions.
But the fear is like the one to obviously, yeah, you the feel in your pit, the stomach, or anxiety and fear, and of course that's demonic,
Yeah, so
typically.
the belly is important inside and out. Like I worked as a personal trainer and I would always have all my clients do a core workout, right? Like without the core is the most important muscle. If you're going to ignore working out every other muscle and keep one, keep the core. Without the core, you won't be able to stand or sit or walk or run or do anything or balance, right? So the core is the most important part, and inside your belly is the most important in terms of physical and spiritual health. So again, a lot of interesting connections, right? We're told, especially in America, that the flesh has nothing to do with the spirit and that it's fully separate. It's just focus on the spiritual parts. I'm like, no, it's all connected. It does matter what you eat. It does matter if you fast or not.
Is
It
that
does
why
matter.
is that why maybe like when you're having going through bad times you're not hungry? Maybe because is it like you're not supposed to be eating? Maybe you should maybe that's a message that you should be
It's
fasting.
the spirit affecting the flesh. It's interconnected, right? If you're going through a bad time, well, that affects you physically. Now you don't want to eat. If there's physically something wrong with you, right? You have like a bad gut health, bad gut microbiome. Well, then that affects your emotions because our emotions come from the gut. So again, it's all intertwined. You're not going to separate it, but people do, and that's where a lot of issues come from. That's why Christianity today in America, especially, is in that kind of state, right? Versus when you go to like, in Europe and like Eastern Orthodoxy, they take fasting very seriously, right? And because of that, they're more like wise in their decisions and how they do things and how they study the Bible. It's a lot deeper, you know what I mean? Versus like Christianity in America is very shallow, right? It's like you don't have to do anything, just believe, right? It's kind of like a an Aleister Crowley, do what thou, like a Christian version of Aleister Crowley's quote, like do what thou wilt as long as you believe in Christ, right? You don't have to do anything. You don't have to take care of your body. You don't have to fast. You don't have to follow the diet law. You don't have to do any of these things. Just believe.
Well,
It's
it's
very
like any.
shallow. Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird because I think anybody who's kind of got into decent shape, you just feel better.
You
And so
do, yeah.
obviously if you feel better, like obviously that, you can feel that in every other aspect. And I'm sure like guys like us who are like, the body is not the most important, but it is important. Like, so because sometimes we neglect our sleep doing the stuff we do. We neglect, what if we're not eating right because we're making videos and doing stuff and you're like kind of stuck behind a
Yeah.
computer. But so we always have to say, like, I need to do more. I obviously at some point you do need to rest. I mean, it's like probably like why God obviously blessed us with like, hey, you need one day a week, you kind of need to chill out. You need to rest and recuperate. You need to eat. You need to eat right. You need to sleep and all that kind of stuff. Because if you neglect that, yeah, that can bring upon stress, and then stress can beget other kinds of ailments. And
A
yeah.
domino effect, and it just affects you, right?
Absolutely.
So yeah, the spirit and the flesh are fully connected. And if you don't realize this, well, then that's why, that's one of the reasons why a lot of people can't get over certain sins like lust, right? Like they're trying to overcome pornography, let's say, and they can't. They always go through this like roller coaster. Oh, 1 week I'm good, 1 week I'm bad, 1 week I'm good, 1 week I'm bad. And I think it's connected to the way we treat our bodies, right? If you can't control your stomach, one of the basic primal urges that we have, control anything else. There's a good chance you can't control anything else. Right. In
Deny
terms of,
yourself.
yeah, deny yourself. If you can't deny your flesh, how are you going to deny other spiritual things and fight within this spiritual warfare that we're having? Right. So if you can't control your flesh, if you can't take care of your flesh, then your spirit goes with it. Right. If your flesh is going downhill, your spirit is going downhill too, and vice versa. But yeah.
Well, I've always said in most of my research, the spiritual and the physical realm are two in one in the same. Now,
Really?
if you want to talk about heaven, that's a different place completely. I think that's where a lot of Christians get confused when they say the body has nothing to do with heaven. You won't have a body in heaven type of thing. But the
Yeah.
astral plane, the spiritual realm of this earth, which a lot of other religions are more concerned with, where the Nephilim reside, where these demons reside, where the spirits are, well, they're disembodied, but they're still here on earth, and it's still earth. The spirit realm is earth. It's
Yep.
not separate from, it's an integral part of it. It's just not a part of the earth we perceive when embodied, but it's there.
Yeah.
And it's like I said, I call it the pipework of reality. It's like the plumbing of the universe. It's kind of like the wires behind the scenes of the mainframe. Like, you're not supposed to see it, but it needs to be there in order for things to work here, and what you do in the physical is a mirror of what's going on in the spiritual. It's the same place, There's no so when you start manifesting illness, and then what something the same thing is mirrored in the spirit realm. Something's happening there too at the same time. They're completely interconnected.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just thought I'd interject there, but yeah, carry on, carry on. This is good, good stuff.
JT, go to the next slide. So yeah, the church fathers considered fasting a very serious thing, right? Like one of the church fathers or one of the saints said in Orthodoxy, I believe, that where there is no prayer and fasting, there are demons, right? So if you don't engage in prayer and fasting, there's a good chance that you're not going to cast out whatever is harming you, right? And then Saint Gregory said that fasting and self-control are a double wall of defense, and whoever lives within them enjoys great peace, right? So that's why often after fasting, like I said before, you have this peace and mental clarity that you didn't experience before, right? Your vision's better, physical ailments are getting cured, you spiritually feel better, you have a drive to want to read the Bible and follow God more and spread the gospel, right? You just feel straight peace. Again, like this church father said, it's a double wall of defense, right? And you enjoy great peace when you do participate in prayer and fasting. And again, fasting itself, it is difficult, especially if you've never done it before. And I don't recommend anybody just jump into a week of fasting if they've never done it, right?
Let's go
So
right to
take it
40
slow.
days.
Exactly, right? So if you're the kind of person that eats breakfast, lunch, and dinner and snacks in between and midnight snacks, I would suggest at least skip the snacks and skip breakfast, right? Hydrate. And if you could do that and no problems, no medical issues, okay, next time or next day, next couple of days, next week, try skipping lunch too. If you could do that, try skipping dinner, go for a full day of no eating, right? If you could do that, try a few days. And again, it all depends on how big you are, right? If you were obese, you can probably handle a couple more days of fasting than the average, and say, person who's skinny, right? Okay, I would suggest to pray on this, if you really want the answer on how.
It doesn't take long to get into autophagy, which is the state of fasting where you're renewing cells and destroying all the parasites and everything. I think it's 12 hours of fasting and that's it, you're in autophagy. Yeah, I think after
Depending on how infected you are, really, but
yeah, but I think it's only after, was it, is it 10 hours or is it 8 hours? No, I think it's like 10 hours you're burning fat from that point on. You're burning fat reserves, and you've used up everything in your stomach from that point for reserves, and now you've turned to the fat, and then after, like, I think it's like 14 hours, you're now renewing dead cells. You're actually becoming renewed in body in form. And all you have to do is just put the fork down, stop eating,
Weird.
drink some water, sure, but that's it, as far as it goes. And I intermittent fast myself. I do it every day. I used to do it every day, but like I said, as I was saying to Joe, I need to get back on it because I've had a holiday and it's easy. It's hard to slip back into the routine. But I tend to stop eating after 6 p.m. and I only start eating again after midday. So I have a 6 hour eating window each day. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I don't necessarily always eat healthy in that 6 hour window. But I do find the fasting in between helps me maintain a level of energy, a clarity, and a general sense of well-being, which I don't have otherwise when I eat after 6 p.m. And sometimes I go longer than 12, past 12, and I think the longest I've done is something like a 43 hour fast or something like that. And you do have to build yourself up through practice, through intermittent fasting first, I find. M make it a part of your life and daily routine. It doesn't have to just be go hard or go home. I'm gonna fast for 3 days and kill every parasite at once sort of situation, Sorry, go on.
So one of my friends actually told me he fasted for a few days, and he told me some like TMI information. And he said on like the second or third day of fasting, he got extremely hungry, right? And his view was that it's the parasites getting desperate because they're starving, right? They're dying. And so they take control of your behavior and your cravings, and they're making you crave sugar, really bad sugar, carbohydrates, processed foods to feed it, because it's dying. And he also said something interesting, and he stated that he became extremely horny on the third day of fasting. And he said
Interesting.
he thinks this is the parasite influencing this behavior, right? Because that's one of the ways they spread is through sexual activity, right, with other people. And so basically, he thinks it's the parasites getting desperate, right? So it's like a last resort type of thing, like, oh, increase their craving for sugar, increase their craving for sex, right, to spread itself. So yeah, I thought that was interesting.
I think I did 2 days once, and then on the third day I was supposed to do like fruit, only fruit, and I did like I was eating fruit like for like half the day, and by dinner I was like, I'm making macaroni and cheese because I am dying. Like I felt like I was just I couldn't make it any longer than that. But yeah, I need to try that again to see if I can go 2 days. Because yeah, there's a whole new level of like how you feel. But I'm one of those people who probably from doing sports and stuff. I'm a eat 6 times a day kind of person. So like trying to go cold turkey is
It's
it's
tough.
pretty it's
I mean,
pretty rough.
what's interesting is like one thing you'll notice if you've never fasted before, like my first time fasting for like 2 full days, right away, I wasn't craving healthy food. I ate everything inside. I was eating chocolate with like some Russian soup and like just a bunch of random stuff.
Gosh.
And I'm just trying to eat as much processed stuff as possible, which is weird. And thinking back on that, I wonder if that's like the parasites kind of like influencing your craving for like a lot of sugar. They're like, oh, you got to eat. We're starving like crazy, right? But we need more fuel. That's kind of how I see it. And that's a lot of people who do fasting for the first time. They'll notice that their craving for sugar increases a lot, especially if you only do it for 2 days. If were to do it for multiple days, I think I wouldn't have that craving. If I at least did it, let's say, for 5 days, my first time, that craving for sugar, I believe, would be gone. I would just crave normal. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah, looking back on
Well,
that.
I found that if you do it daily, and like I said, just maybe you reach autophagy for a couple of hours a day. So do a
Yeah.
16-hour fast every day for 365 days, you know, for a year. Then on a daily basis, you're chipping away at the parasitical infection inside of you. You're killing them off slowly, bit by bit. And I found when I was in that mode, and I'd say I'd been doing it for a few months, if I got to 12, my body clock is like, okay, it's time to eat. And it knows because of routine, you know, and sometimes the hunger doesn't come now. Sometimes, you know, it hits midday and it's like, I don't really want to eat. I can still keep going. I'm not hungry. Like, and I've got
It's almost
energy.
ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. And eventually you get past those horrible, strong waves of cravings that just overtake you. Wait 15 minutes. Guarantee it will stop. No, it seems to
Yeah.
be how it goes. They don't have, it's like if this is the parasites doing this, they haven't got much energy themselves to keep going at you to move and make you eat. You know, it's like they burn out too and they
Influence their
crash.
behavior, cravings. Yeah, very
Yeah.
true.
Is
Go to the
it
next slide.
isn't it really common as well, for people who don't fast that mid like at night time they crave sugar? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, but people seem to like. I remember I used to like. For some reason, it comes like 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. I want to eat a full chocolate bar for some reason.
Yeah.
Like it's a raging desire as well. It's kind of like it takes over you. It's like
Bizarre. Yeah.
I've got to eat some chocolate now. It's
Yeah.
one of those feelings. You know what I mean? And you know it's not you. I know it's not me. I'm like, why? Why? And I eat the chocolate bar and I feel really bad about myself afterwards. I'm like,
Same.
why? Why did I just do that? I feel like I've been used. That's what it feels like, you know. And maybe it is. Maybe this is what's actually going on. It's just interesting. So go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So yeah, continuing the topic of, biblical commandments being anti-parasitical, the diet law is also anti-parasite. So within the Bible, the book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy, God gives us a list of animals we should be eating and shouldn't be eating, right? So one thing I found that's interesting about the unclean animals, the common thing they have with each other is the fact that they're all bottom feeders. They eat dead carcasses and dead animals and garbage and feces, right? And scientifically, unclean animals within the Bible are more likely to be a haven for parasites, right? Like pork. We've all heard of like pork worms and pork parasites, right? Specifically associated with pork. Shellfish, right? A lot of shellfish also contains parasites because they're like the bottom feeders of the ocean. They eat whatever and they become havens for parasites, and people eat these products and that's one of the ways they become infected. So yeah, the diet law is anti-parasite, which is very interesting. But yeah, next one.
It definitely does put into context, doesn't it? It just seems like such an arbitrary law. Don't eat shellfish.
Yeah.
It's like why? Why? It's such an odd thing to say, isn't it? Like of all
Fish
the
without
animals,
scale.
yeah. It's like of all the
Well,
animals, just not
it's
that
funny,
one.
like,
You know. Go ahead.
I think Jay Dreamer Z, we were doing a thing, and he has this thing about shellfish, and he's basically saying like they're like insects, like, you
Yeah,
know,
they
they're
are
like
of the
that's
ocean. Yeah.
basically what they are. It's like kind of like, yeah, like a cockroach and like a lobster are really not all that different.
Yeah, so I do follow the diet a lot because it practically makes sense, right? Like a rule of thumb is just follow what Jesus did. Did Jesus eat unclean animals? No. Well, there's probably good reason for that, right? And although the Bible doesn't give us the broad reason or the specific reasons for a lot of the commandments, it says in the Bible that the spirit of truth is going to lead you to all truth, right? So if you want answers for why you should follow this, well, God's going to lead you to these answers. And I believe he's led me to figuring out this kind of stuff, right? So another commandment in the Bible is that God tells people in Leviticus or his people to salt every food offering that they have, meaning put sea salt on every single food item. And
Paul,
according to
see, maybe we don't oversalt things. Maybe you guys
well,
undersalt
here's the thing. There's the difference between natural sea salt and table salt. Table salt is horrible. It's full of caking agents and preservatives. Sea salt is good for you, right? Natural sea salt is. And so there are scientific studies that show that a diet high in sea salt could protect against invading microbes and parasites, basically kill them, right? So in Leviticus chapter 2, verse 13, it says, "And every oblation of thy meat offering shalt thou season with salt, neither shalt thou suffer the salt of thy covenant, of the covenant of thy God, to be lacking from thy meat offering. With all thine offerings thou shalt offer salt," right? So he's saying, don't be stingy with the salt, right? When you salt your meat and stuff, like every single food that you eat, every meat you cook with, put a decent amount of salt on it. And like I said, scientifically, it kills parasites, right? A diet higher in sea salt kills parasites. Another thing I didn't mention on here is I believe drinking wine also helps your gut microbiome, right? It fixes it. And I believe it also kills parasites. And in the Bible, I don't know if it was Timothy who said, for the sake of your stomach, drink a little wine, not just water, right? For ailments, he even said specifically for ailments and sicknesses, drink a little wine, not just water. So obviously in moderation, right? Don't get drunk, but like you can drink wine, it's not a sin.
Was well, is it because alcohol kills certain like bacteria?
And there's vitamins and
Probably.
minerals in wine that's also benefits
Is
the
it
gut microbiome.
the antioxidants in red
Yep,
wine?
antioxidants, correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And so even Timothy says that for the sake of your stomach, drink a little wine, don't just drink water, right? And what was I going to say? Yeah, next slide, I guess.
It's funny because red wine is definitely my drink of choice if I was to
Love
I,
red wine. That's okay. I don't like anything else. Red wine is my favorite,
I don't
but
really drink anymore. I don't have time being a father. I just don't
yeah.
like I just don't even I can't even imagine being drunk anymore because what if I need to go what if something happens and I need to drive? It's one of those
Yeah.
type of things. I would never risk it, but I do when I did drink regularly it was always wine, red wine. I always looked very strange to everyone else around me, drinking lager and spirits and things like that. I was always the one with a glass of wine in my hand. But maybe there's a good reason for that. Maybe the Lord was moving through me and I didn't even realize it at the time. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, even in the Bible, it says that God made wine to gladden the heart of man. So it's also for our enjoyment too, in moderation, right? That was one of the first miracles Jesus did for the wedding. It's not like it's only for medicine, right? It is for your enjoyment,
But
relax.
it says multiple times in the Bible that it's, like I said, it's to make your heart merry. So, I mean, it's,
Exactly, right? It was
yeah,
made
there
by
is.
God, and he blesses it, right? So yeah,
They were
just
drinking at a wedding. They were drinking at a wedding because it makes your heart merry.
well, the Baptists say it was Welch's grape juice that they were drinking.
Yeah, actually, Demon Racers and I had an argument about that, and I was just like, it's funny because even like some people would say, well, if the older wine gets fermented, and that's what it is. But specifically in Acts chapter 2, when the Holy Spirit descends on them after Pentecost,
Yeah.
they get accused of being drunk on
He's
new
drunk off
wine.
of them. Yeah,
But
exactly.
they say, I think the translation says new wine. They're too full of new wine.
Yeah,
That's
and
when they
grape juice doesn't heal your gut microbiome like wine. So it's definitely alcoholic wine. It's not Welch's grape juice. But yeah.
and Noah got drunk off wine after he
Exactly.
made a vineyard, and so the wine back in
Wine's
Noah's
wine.
day got you drunk. I would say
Yeah.
that wine's always probably been wine.
Yes, it's
Yeah.
been wine is wine, right? So yeah, this was the end, and I believe the Bible does mention these parasites, and I think it calls it the worm that never dies in the book of Mark, chapter 9, verse 46. But yeah, that's all I got.
Well, we were just saying before while you were off, I was saying what's interesting, Lord of the Rings, you have Wormtongue is the one who is like possessing Théoden, like the king. Remember, he's all like demon possessed and he has to be cast
Is
him
it when he
out.
opens his mouth and then little worms out there?
Well, no, there's the evil looking character. He's kind of got he's real kind of slimy looking. He's got dark black hair, real
That's
pale
right.
skin, and his name is Wormtongue, and he's like the one who is got this spell over the king, and the king looks all old and decrepit, and then he gets cast out of him, and then he becomes like he was before.
Okay,
It's
okay, I remember.
pretty interesting that it's the worm tongue. And I couldn't help but think, like, when I was preparing for this, I was watching some videos about that, yeah, parasites are demons, and they were
Yeah.
mentioning the zombie snail, the zombie cicadas. And the zombie deer, and the zombie deer were like literally unaliving themselves, jumping off a bridge, jumping off cliffs. There's like video of it. It's obviously it's really horrific. And I couldn't help but think when Jesus casts out Legion,
Yeah.
Legion doesn't want to go to the pit, so he says, "Send me into the pigs." And what
The
do the
herd
pigs do?
of they
The
drowned
pigs
themselves.
they immediately go down and drown themselves.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? Speaking of the whole parasite thing, the T. gandhi can also affect like other animals like crickets. And there's something called cricket suicide where the parasite takes control of the brain and body and forces the cricket to drown itself, and then the parasite comes out and infects something else. So it's interesting that the pigs chose to drown themselves and free the demons, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Well, that was a great presentation, actually.
Oh,
Thanks for doing that. I really appreciate that. I have so many questions. The first one that immediately comes to my mind, and what I'm wondering immediately is, do we know where parasites came from? Do we have a scientific explanation for the origin of the parasites, like as a concept, as a thing, or is it one of those
yeah.
things that we assume they've just always been there? They've evolved with mankind and so forth. But I don't know. It's just such an, well, because when you see them up close, and like the
Yeah.
thumbnail I made here, they look like demons. They look like monsters. They look like what you would imagine a demon to look like if you were to actually see one in person, you know. But they are microscopic, invisible to the human eye, you know. But when you look at them, yeah, they look like creatures from the void, from some kind of Lovecraftian horror, you
Yeah.
know. They are actually like monsters, true
Yeah.
monsters, and.
Very weird looking things. I believe maybe this is how they're able to thrive, you know, after the flood, when the physical form of the demons and the gods were wiped out. This is how they thrived, right? This is how they controlled people, controlled the pharaohs, maybe with the whole serpent thing coming out of its head.
Absolutely.
I want you to get together.